What's good, everybody? Prime Fantasy Draft Week is upon us. Pete Jensen and Rob Reese back with you for one of our biggest episodes of the season. And we're joined, Robbie, by Nick Alberga. This is the time, man, right? This is when you finalize your draft cheat sheet, your big board, and you go to battle here for your drafts, right?
It really is a fantastic time of year, guys. Thanks, as always, for having me. And certainly the next couple weeks will be an interesting one for all of us on social media as people get annoyed by our picks and are happy with our selections and what we're preaching out there. So let's have some fun.
No doubt. Let's do it. I'm already in a draft myself. It's a slow draft, so still have a couple picks to make. But I've noticed along the way that there's been some serious bargains already on the table. The first one I want to throw out to the roundtable is Spencer Knight of the Florida Panthers. Wasn't even drafted in the top 100 in this league that I'm in. We see that his ADP is much lower than where we have him ranked. And I know, Nick, you might not be as high on the Florida Panthers this season as other media members, including Pete and myself.
I think there is, on my part, there is slight hesitancy to go with a 20-year-old goalie with four games of NHL experience, granted on a really, really excellent hockey team. And I think there has to be hesitancy. And number two, you have Sergei Bobrovsky. That's $10 million on your bench. And knowing Joel Quenneville and what he did the last couple of years, Bobrovsky is getting starts. So it's nothing against Spencer Knight. I just know as a fantasy owner, guys, I have to be patient with this file. Like, I think he's going to be an absolute stud. I think the window has officially opened for this Florida Panthers team, and we'll see what happens here with Sasha Barkov, who's entering a contract year. But I just have to be patient and understanding, you know, the age of the goalie, what's happened in the last couple of years, especially with rookie goalies, and I'm taking nothing away from him. I just think there's going to be more value outside of Spencer Knight when it comes to goaltending.
Yeah, I think we've seen a lot of different examples. Some goalies much younger than others. Like I know, Nick, you brought up Carter Hart and how that thing has kind of tumbled. We saw a guy like Mackenzie Blackwood very early in his 20s, you know, starring for a pretty bad team. Now they got a much improved roster around him. You've also seen, like last year, all the turbulence with the Rangers and Shesterkin, who was a little bit older, actually fared really well in save percentage. So in terms of the group around Spencer Knight in Florida, including Bobrovsky, I just like that experience factor. I like that they're loaded offensively, defensively. They're getting Ekblad back. I just think that the supporting cast in Florida makes me not really worry about the similar situation, at least in terms of the young goaltender with Carter Hart, because in Philly, it was always like, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back. The defense was pretty brutal last year. That was why they finished last in save percentage as a team. So, yeah, I don't really draw the same comparison to the team, while I understand your concerns about, you know, Spencer Knight versus Carter Hart.
I want to go back to last season and talk about Ilya Sorokin, because he obviously finished the year with a beautiful stat line. He did a lot for people that were patient with him in fantasy. But some context here, he only played five games for the first 2.5 months of the regular season. So if you drafted Ilya Sorokin and put the high stock into that player, you really got no return for him unless you had him sitting on your bench waiting almost, it felt like, half the season in fantasy to get that return. So I think it's a very fair point that, yes, Spencer Knight probably has one of the highest ceilings of a young goaltender in the NHL, but you're going to have to be patient and you have to know what you're getting into. So from my experience, now that I've learned from this first draft already, if Spencer Knight's going to go a little bit later, I have no problem waiting for him, but I'm probably also just a little bit more hesitant to pull the trigger around the 50 to 60 range where we've kind of been taking him in our NHL.com mock drafts early on.
I took him both times in the mock drafts, including the first one was a major reach. So like, if you're able to get this guy later, and especially, you know, tandem him up with Bobrovsky, I think it's a really safe team. I think anybody, even if you're skeptical about Florida or Spencer Knight individually, you probably have Florida penciled in for top five in the league in wins, or even if you're a little lower, top 10 in the league in wins. So that's a nice security blanket.
Yeah, I just don't want Panthers Army coming after me. I'm just trying to be reasonable with my expectation for a 20-year-old who's played four games. And that team in general, like that Atlantic Division, guys, is going to be extremely, extremely difficult. You look at what Boston has done. I think Toronto's going to be sniffing in that conversation. Tampa's won back-to-back cups. Montreal went to the Stanley Cup final last year. Like, it just goes on and on, where we know there's probably a couple teams in that division that are going to get beat up on a bit. And don't sleep on Ottawa, who I thought was a tough team to play against last year too. So I just think every season there's always that one sexy team in the off season that everybody's talking about and everybody loves, and they rarely live up to the expectation or the hype off the opening puck drop. I'm taking nothing away from the Panthers. I think they have an excellent roster, and we'll see if they can put it together, and we'll see how loud the Barkov conversation gets too. And I understand the market, right? Because it's Florida and it's Sunrise, with all due respect, we're not really talking about Alexander Barkov. In my opinion, a top 10 player in this world is slated to become a UFA in less than a year. That's a scary, scary situation, if you ask me.
Well, let's stay in the division here and turn to the Montreal Canadiens. There's two players on the board I think are tremendous value. One is Tyler Toffoli, left wing, right wing. We have him ranked 92 on NHL.com. He's being drafted on average 151 on Yahoo. And then same type of player, Brendan Gallagher, right wing only though, we have him ranked 139th. He's not being drafted until 164 overall. And I think no matter how you feel, if Montreal regresses or not, both these guys are pretty consistent and return value in fantasy.
Yeah. I mean, definitely, you know, the attachment of Nick Suzuki is, you know, first and foremost, right? Like, he's a rising star in this league. We saw how he played in the Stanley Cup playoffs. You know, if you were to ask me who I was more interested in drafting, and it depends on what happens in my draft, mind you, but it's probably Gallagher. I've watched a lot of Tyler Toffoli, and I think, you know, one of the things I've taken away throughout his career is how streaky he can be. And granted, most goal scorers are, but just how random last season was, you know, how it played out here in Canada, playing all Canadian teams. Many people felt it was a bit watered down. Again, you have to be expecting a bit of a dip in regression for Tyler Toffoli. I still think he's going to be fantasy relevant, but I think that's why there's some massive hesitation with that file. You know, when you talk about value, I'm actually looking at Christian Dvorak, guys. You know, I think he's had some pretty decent chemistry early on here with Jonathan Drouin, who's coming back, and Josh Anderson. And sort of, you know, the way I see that situation is that everybody's eyes, the opposition will be game planning against the Suzuki line. That could open up more time and space for, you know, a Dvorak who comes into the mix, and Josh Anderson, who had flashes of brilliance last year. So I think, you know, number one, I do agree with you. I think there's value to be found in Montreal fantasy-wise this season.
Right, and Philip Deneau is gone. So Deneau was a two-way player, but more on the defensive end. He would get you face-off wins. Of course, he was great for that, and he would get you blocked shots as a forward. But Dvorak, a little bit more offensive-minded as a player. We've already seen flashes of it in the preseason. And I think that that could help Gallagher, who, when I was looking back, top 10 in the league last year in goals per 60 minutes was Brendan Gallagher. I was really surprised to see that. And he's been a little bit more consistent through thick and thin in terms of providing category coverage. He'll get you shots on goal. He'll get you hits. Whereas Toffoli, 1 year like last year, will get you 17.7 shooting percentage and 28 goals in 52 games. Whereas a couple of years prior, when the offense was dry in LA, he shot about 5% and had a brutal season, despite having a really heavy shot volume, 226 shots, 13 goals in 82 games for the Kings in 2018-19. So that's what we're talking about with the floor. That's what Nick alluded to with Toffoli. Maybe people are not convinced that he's going to be, you know, that bang for your buck that he was last year in the shortened season.
Well, I think it's interesting too, Nick, what you brought up about the divisions. I mean, I think that's one thing people should key in on drafts. And remember, this Atlantic division is going to look a lot different than a year prior to the COVID shortened season. Goaltenders, especially Toronto, has a different cast. Boston has a completely different cast. Florida is going through that transitory phase. Buffalo first. What is their tandem, by the way? What are they really rolling out there? So
Craig Anderson and Aaron Dell.
I mean, I'm all over those guys in late rounds. So no, don't do that. But I think it's very important that, like, if you are drafting and you are looking at these guys in late rounds, you should be considering, okay, this Atlantic division is probably going to be a lot of offensive juggernauts. And then the Metro division, I know a lot of Philadelphia Flyers like Couturier, Giroux, those guys aren't being picked until late in the draft. But I would argue this, Petey, that the Metro is so darn good, it might be hard for those guys to really max out their value compared to some of these other divisions.
Right. Yeah. That division is quickly becoming, like, the head-to-head games are going to be so crucial because everybody, including Ottawa, could really feast on teams like Detroit and Buffalo, right? Even Detroit, since we last talked, it sounds like Larkin is okay for the start of the season, but Jacob Vrana is going to be out 4 months. So, like, Detroit is not nearly what we were talking about the last time out in terms of them being a much improved team. that really sets them back in their what we thought was an accelerated rebuild. Now it's still a full-on rebuild. So yeah, expect there to be a lot of value even later in this bargains list. You'll see Tim Stützle, Drake Batherson. You could get Brady Tkachuk, who's still a holdout right now, but you could get him about 10 picks later than where we have him drafted in the first couple of rounds. So there's a lot of value on Ottawa as well. And I think everybody's going to be feasting on those teams. So then it'll come down to who beats each other enough times head to head and, you know, avoids the 3-point games.
Yeah, I think in general in your drafts, I mean, there's going to be players who drop. Again, I think patience is a virtue when it comes to fantasy drafting. You know, I'm sure you guys do get questions about, hey, what should I do if this happens? It's all subjective, right? Like, you know, I get a lot of questions, common area to ask about goaltending, but it's so tough to quantify because you don't know how the draft board is going to go. Like, all of us have done drafts. The fact that, you know, Vasilevsky goes somewhere in the first 12, 13, we'll say, and then there's a waiting game to see who's going to make the first move for a Leonard or a Kemper. And then after that, we call it a goalie run where, you know, guys and girls go nuts over who they should select. And next thing you know, you're left, you know, with a tough, you know, number two goalie and a number three goalie because you've been too patient, right? So you have to feel out your draft is the best advice I can give.
I couldn't agree with that more. And I see it firsthand in my one league where I took Fleury. I got to have him around 50-ish overall. I can't say I'm fully confident in that pick. I like Flower. He's in a contract year, whatever that means at 37 years old. I'm not sure. And then my second goalie is Sorokin, who obviously I'm high on. But again, look at the context, look at the frame. He's playing backup right now to Semyon Varlamov, who has been one of the better goalies in fantasy the last few years. So these are all important elements, I think, you know, should be in the back of your mind when you're entering your drafts.
And Nick, I know you're, you know, a little love-hate relationship with the New York Islanders fans on Twitter. Of course, follow Nick at the Golden Muzzy and see what I'm talking about. But I think one good comparison very close to each other in our rankings is Spencer Knight versus Ilya Sorokin. And Robbie and I were talking in the office the other day, like one of those two guys is probably going to bust out and win the starting job by the end of the season outright. You already see Varlamov dealing with a little injury to start training camp and preseason. They're being careful with him. But like, what's your thoughts on Sorokin's ceiling? Because even in the playoffs last year, 4-1, he really took command in that series against Pittsburgh and played his role at the time. But I think I'm expecting Sorokin either this year or next year to win the job outright and run with it.
Yeah, I think there's no question that's going to happen. And I think they've mapped it out that way. And Rob, I thought it was an excellent point earlier on about training camp. And I think the biggest reason Sorokin didn't get off the ground running is because of the shorter training camp that we saw last year. And that's why they were very careful and it insulated him very well in the starts. And that's why in the second half, Sorokin really, really took off. If you were to compare those two, like, they're both excellent teams. The Islanders are always a team people are going to overlook. They've been to what, back-to-back conference finals now. My rankings, my top 250, expect to come out today on sportsnet.ca. I have Sorokin in like the top 60 and I have Spencer Knight in my top 95. I think the ceiling is just higher from a defensive point of view with the New York Islanders that more times than not, you know what you're going to expect. As for the Florida Panthers do have games, blips in the radar, whatever you want to call them, where they struggle to keep the puck out of the net. It doesn't matter who's in there. So I think, you know, there's a bit more comfort and stability going with a guy like Sorokin, who I do agree. I think it does happen this year. I think come playoff time, Sorokin's the number one goaltender with the New York Islanders. That kid's future is so bright.
And honestly, with Sorokin too, let's just keep in mind, he was one of the highest rated goalie prospects in recent history. So the track record has been there for a long time. He was tremendous in the KHL. And then, you know, these guys are coming over here a little bit later. So I think it's a very safe pick. And Pete, the more I think about it, I'm starting to see Samsonov going higher in fantasy drafts. Yep. Sorokin below that, I think right now Sorokin's going to give you much better value than Ilya Samsonov, who, yes, he was a highly rated prospect, but now we're seeing he's already day-to-day. He's being reevaluated today. And just keep in mind, the same time I mentioned the Jakub Vrána situation last week when he had like a little shoulder injury on the first day of practice, he's out 4 months now. I'm not saying that Samsonov is going through this serious concern, but it's just something to keep in mind. And also with the New York Islanders, yes, they are a little boring offensively, but that's really good when you're drafting either the defenseman, if you're in a bangers league, or their goalies, either Varlamov or Sorokin, you're going to get value.
We have Samsonov projected for, I think, fifth or sixth in wins, but he's dealing with a little injury situation as well. So keep an eye on that. And don't let history repeat itself, right? We do have Vitek Vanacek on our top 10 sleeper list for this season. It's not because there's anything to say anything negative about from his production last year, leading all rookies in wins. It's just people still lean towards Sammy in the grand scheme of things. They lean toward that untapped potential, but Vanacek may be a little safer. And if we're projecting Washington to either be winning the division over the Islanders and the rest, or finishing close to that, like they do every single year, Vanacek's going to play his part. And he's another one like that could be considered a bargain later on. We've been talking about all these highly touted guys, but you could find Vanacek outside the top 100, maybe even 120 or 130. You could also find guys like Blackwood, who's a workhorse when he's in the net for the Jersey Devils. You could also find Jacob Markstrom for the Calgary Flames. That's one guy we haven't talked too much about this offseason, Jacob Markstrom. But if you look at guys that take on added importance and value in wins leagues where you prioritize workload, or saves leagues, you have to be looking at guys like Thatcher Demko and Jacob Markstrom as the guys who gain the most value in those formats, Nick.
Yeah, so I got a couple things on Markstrom specifically. Number one, can you guys give me the backup name for the Calgary Flames? It's Dan Vladar. I'll answer it for you because I don't want to put you in a tough spot, and you guys knew this. Limited experience in the NHL. What I'm saying, it's going to be Jacob Markstrom's crease. Number two, he's got a hefty contract. I don't think there isn't as much pressure in year two of a hefty contract that there is in year one going to a new team. And number three, it's Daryl Sutter time. Look at the offseason, guy. Like, it's ridiculous. Zadorov, Coleman, Richardson. Like, they brought in guys to grind it up, which I love as a fantasy owner. Of Jacob Markstrom. I think I'm the only one to have Jacob Markstrom in my top 100 in general. I think Calgary is prone to play 3-2 hockey games this year. Johnny Gaudreau's in a contract here. I think Calgary is going to exceed expectations. And I think along those lines, I think Jacob Markstrom has a stronger second year than a first year. I don't know about you guys. I'm willing to give a mulligan to a lot of people in general in life last year, especially in the National Hockey League, especially in fantasy hockey, because that was such a bizarre and strange year, especially here in Canada. It's great to see a crowd back.
And for the Flames too, Sean Monahan battling pretty serious injuries the past 2.5 seasons. That does add up. Johnny Gaudreau not finding his stride. That adds up when you're talking about goal support for a goalie like Markstrom. I like him too, Nick, and I really do value workhorse goalies. If I could get him outside the top 100, I feel tremendous about that. Yeah. And when we look at their division, the Pacific, I would argue, is completely wide open after Vegas. There's Vegas. I think Edmonton should be the clear number two, but again, they have concerns. And then number three, I think, should be the Vancouver Canucks, who are poised for a little bounce back. After those teams, though, who I think are all going to make the playoffs in the first three spots, you've got Calgary, who's right there, who Pete and I were just talking about this last week. There's no reason they shouldn't be going head to head with Vancouver, just about on the same playing field. So I do like that appeal for Markstrom. I like it for Blake Coleman a lot, who's going to cover great categories for you in Hits League. He's been skating on the top line in training camp so far in preseason, so something to keep an eye on there. But this is one of the safer goalie situations if you need that true outright number one and you're a little bit shy about taking a timeshare like Sorokin, like Spencer Knight, guys like that.
Yeah, I just think to wrap on that convo, like, I wholeheartedly agree with Markstrom. I think a sleeper, by the way, on Calgary's Andrew Mangiapane, just coming off that world championship, the way he's trending upwards for that team. And they're going to grind it up. Like, I'm so curious to see Daryl Sutter hockey in 2021, a game known for its young players and its speed, that we're going to play a grinding style. And all the power to the Calgary Flames. A team, guys, I expected to make monumental changes here in the offseason, and that's not what they did, if you know what I'm saying.
They're definitely taking the patience route and hoping that it pays off in the easiest division in the league. So they at least have that box to check that they're in a good spot here for a bounce back. One of the guys that I had on my roster in one of my leagues from Calgary was Elias Lindholm. And I actually just kept him in one league that I inherited last year. And I kept him because I didn't really have a great third sleeper on that squad. So Elias Lindholm, like, he plays center all day now. And he's either going to be with Gaudreau and or Matthew Tkachuk. And that's a great spot for him as well. So another place where you could find around the top 100 overall. You could even get like back-to-back picks if you want to invest in the Flames. You could go Markstrom and then Elias Lindholm, who falls in some of these drafts for some reason, was super consistent last year for that team I was talking about.
Well, it wouldn't be a fantasy show unless we put the disclaimer there that not every team and every player bounces back. It doesn't happen. There are going to be, I think, one of the Philadelphia Flyers who kind of made similar offseason moves to the Calgary Flames or the Calgary Flames. I think one of those two teams will implode this season and then make monumental moves the following offseason. So I do want to throw that out there.
Yep.
I appreciate what the Flames did in the offseason. Obviously, they made their bed with the Daryl Sutter brand. And then the Philadelphia Flyers, I'm a little bit less high on what they did. But to their credit, they are trying to insulate Carter Hart. They are trying to pave way to orchestrate this bounce back. It just doesn't always work out that way.
I'm actually really, really bullish on Carter Hart to get to that conversation as a bounce back in general. There's no way he could be as bad as last year. And I actually don't mind like the moves, the acquisitions that Philly made. If you notice, it's a lot of leadership type guys, and I'm not questioning their leadership from last year, but I think losing a guy like Matt Niskanen was big for that team. So you enter a Ryan Ellis, you enter a Rasmus Ristolainen, who's very, very vocal. You know, Cam Atkinson was beloved in Columbus. Like, they're in love with Cam Atkinson, and it was tough for him to leave that market because it meant so much to him. So players like that, I think, will help to elevate and drag that team, not to mention my guy, my favorite player in the NHL, Claude Giroux, in a contract year. I'm buying on the Flyers this year, boys. I don't know about you guys. Well, you're not. I know you're not, but whatever. Do what you want to do.
Yeah, I mean, Giroux was one of my favorite fantasy players like 5 years ago and 10 years ago, but the times have changed here. Yeah. He was still really productive last year.
He's out the better. You're right.
Yeah. Better than I remembered. Honestly, like Giroux was putting up points last year, but they did lose Jacob Voracek, one of their top distributors for the past number of years. I like the Ellis move. I don't really like much else, to be honest.
Yandle, let's go.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Yandle, Ristolainen, I just don't trust them defensively. And I think that Carter Hart needs a little bit more than that to help his cause these days. I also worry about, you know, just Vigneault, you know, over the course of the season, if they struggle at some point, it's a very difficult division. So what's going to happen a couple months in if they underachieve after all these moves? It's kind of like what Robbie was mentioning. The writing may be on the wall. So, yeah, that's my concern with Philly. Personally, not drafting too many of their players. Maybe Giroux, if I could get him in late rounds. Maybe Ryan Ellis around top 120 overall. Other than that, maybe Provorov. There's just not a whole lot to like. There's so many more exciting. I could name 20 more exciting fantasy teams.
For Yandle specifically, I just want to counter on that a little bit, because last year with the Florida Panthers, he only had 27 points in 56 games. He was a minus eight over the span. And if you think about the circumstance with Aaron Ekblad going down, like, that should have been Yandel's time to kind of recapture that throne and show us a little bit more promise than, you know, making nice backhand sauces on the power play, which he does do well. It just doesn't translate anymore to an 82 game season. So I think I would take a pass on that player. And then to kind of move the conversation ahead to bring some other teams into this, like, I have noticed in every mock draft that I've done, and now this one league that started drafting recently, I have not taken players from Philadelphia, from Nashville, obviously from Buffalo, that goes without saying, and Arizona as well. But it's like, these teams aren't necessarily totally repulsive to me on paper, you know, the Philadelphias of the world. I just haven't really found any players that really intrigue me. Pete, maybe a guy like Farabee late in the draft. Yes, still got a lot of upside, but specifically about Nashville, like, Roman Josi's been on the board and I've been like, nah. UC Saros has been there. I've been like, nah. Matt Duchene, Ryan Johansson. Like, I just don't really have that same level of interest in that team that I did maybe 3 or 4 years ago.
I'm putting my hand up. I love contract years. Philip Forsberg. Give me some Philip Forsberg. I saw the other night, I know it was preseason, but he was like 2-3 or whatever. I don't know. He had 4 or 5 point night. I'm like, here's Philip Forsberg. Guy wants to get paid. He wants to be elsewhere. Like, he's going to get dealt, I think. I don't think it makes sense to re-sign a Philip Forsberg. But don't forget the concept of money motivation. We talk about this a lot in fantasy hockey and contract years. I'm not afraid to go to the well of teams we think aren't going to be good. Like, I don't think Nashville is going to be a team that contends for a playoff spot this year. I could be wrong. UC Saros had an incredible finish to last year. And Roman Josi, for my money, still what, a top three, top four defenseman in this league. I will sniff around on Josi. I will sniff around on Philip Forsberg, but I totally comprehend what you're saying. It always just comes down to me and saying, like, somebody has to score for that team. That's usually how I bog it down to.
No, it's very true. I mean, you can look at four players on that team, and there's going to be a lot of fantasy value from those four players. Roman Josi, even if he takes another step back, is going to be a 50-point guy if he's healthy over 82 games. Forsberg, you mentioned, contract year. Eli Tolvanen covers hits in the depths of your fantasy draft and will probably be on the top line with either Duchesne or Johansson and Forsberg on the opposite wing. And then UC Saros, I mean, knock the team all you want. He's going to be playing all the games pretty much now. You know, his backup in Nashville is the old guy from Calgary, but he's not so great either. So, yeah, I think that, like, Saros is probably going to play 55, 60 games for the Predators this year at least. And then he'll translate to wins leagues, and he might even stand on his head and get you a couple shutouts. So even though the roster is much more barren than it's been in years past, those four guys on Nashville will definitely return a lot of fantasy value. So if you could get them when they fall a little bit, like Forsberg has plummeted in some drafts. And, you know, I just think it's like, I wouldn't reach for those guys, but if they fall into your lap, you got to take them.
Even for Josi, I think it's going to be difficult this season to return a lot of value, because the only thing that could go right for Nashville is if Tolvanen becomes like a 65 to 70 point player this season. That would be great for them. Unfortunately, they kind of just committed to their D group for so many years. Even though they had the best D core in the league, they refused to part with a single one of those guys to maybe get a more offensive minded player. It just never really came to fruition, even though every year those guys were linked in trade rumors. So it kind of is what it is now, which is frustrating, sure, from a fantasy lens, but I see your point, Nick. Like, there are still some safety nets there. I just don't know if I want to rely on Philip Forsberg being my, like, predominant left wing unless he falls into my lap around like 115 to 130. It's a different story.
I guess we differ, because I have Philip Forsberg at number 62 and I'm drafting him.
Wow, that's really high. But suit yourself, man. He's a great player. He's really put up great numbers in previous years. It's just like, to the similar extent of Tarasenko, but not so much injury related. So you just wonder about his standalone value moving forward, Philip Forsberg. I did want to mention, we were talking so much about the Flyers, not to dwell on them, but Sean Couturier is their best overall player, and he is on our bargains list. He's ranked 86th. He's a center only, which doesn't help in terms of roster flexibility, but he's going 143.1. Wow. I mean, he's perennial underestimated fantasy player, and he's among the elite in terms of actual real life hockey players, in terms of two-way players at the center position. So don't, like, overlook Sean Couturier. He's one of the very best in the game, and he will help them man down the fort without Kevin Hayes for 6 to 8 weeks. That's a big loss for Philly.
It is.
I wanted to mention, I think that Kevin Hayes being out for 6 to 8 weeks offsets any slight improvement going on in Philly from the offseason moves.
And remember, Philadelphia is a perennial fast starting team. They have gotten off to some of the best starts over the past few years. The Hayes thing could absolutely offset that, Petey. And if they fall behind at all in that division, that's Everest. They're not coming back from that. So definitely an interesting storyline to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think Martin Jones is stealing the number one job. No, he's not. I just want to say in general, with centers, I know I get asked that question a lot, what to do, when it comes to centers. I think you guys would agree there's some marquee talent, say, in the top 25. But I think if you're patient in fantasy hockey, as you guys mentioned, you know, I love the Couturier look. Like, that's certainly a guy I'm looking at. I always seem to draft Sean Couturier, but I think there's going to be a return on investment. I think there's going to be a bounce back in store for a player like that. And I think the later your draft goes on, I think you can find some extreme value on centers, say 120 to 180. You know, another guy that pops into my head right now that I hope is going to have a bounce back season is like a Sean Monahan with Calgary, as you alluded to, Rob. So I think patience could be a virtue as well when it comes to secondary centers. I'm not going to say, like, I think it's always smart to have a marquee stud up the middle. But after that, I think you can wait and be patient and look at some wingers and elsewhere in your roster.
You can get Trocheck later in drafts. Yeah. He's a tremendous player for category coverage.
Contract year.
Contract, exactly. Jack Hughes is going very late. You know, whether they think he's going to break out or not, it's still good value for the player. Braden Schenn is another guy I see going outside the 110 range. And I don't know how you feel about the St. Louis Blues, Nick. I'm not that high on the team, but it is worth noting that he fits that bill of a Sean Couturier, where you know exactly what you're getting from the player each year in and each year out in fantasy. And for me, like, that's a good strategy outside the top 115 or so. I know exactly what I'm picking in a guy like Braden Schenn. I don't think the Blues are going to be that great this season, but I still think I'm going to get value from the player.
No, it's a good point, because like, fantasy owners are always looking for stability. And I notice, and I keep my rankings from previous years, like one time you'll have a guy ranked here and then the next year you won't have him ranked at all. And then every year there's the guys who surprise and play up to their abilities, if you will. And that's where I think in lies the ongoing conversations with fantasy owners, is like, how much stock do I put into a guy's breakout? Is it going to happen? So anytime you can find a file that's stable and you know every year you're going to get, 60 points and whatever, 25 goals, you have to keep going to the well, because I don't know about you guys. I think it's tough to find players who you know what they're going to give year in and year out, because every year seems to be different these days.
Right. I mean, that's why you kind of have to gravitate towards some of these guys that cover hits and or blocks and also provide the scoring touch. Even if, Tom Wilson might be a risk, even if Braden Schenn, you don't know exactly where he's going to be playing in the lineup. Is he going to play center or wing? You know what? It really doesn't matter. Same goes for like Pavelski, who was a big surprise last year. Another center right wing guy that covers faceoffs. He's going to play on the power play, net front. I mean, he's another pretty sure thing. Maybe he regresses in his point production, but like Blake Wheeler is another one. You could get Blake Wheeler right around the top 100 overall. I think that he has to be sharpied in for 65 plus points with exposure to Mark Scheifele, who we actually saw, me and Robbie, that in terms of most games with at least a point last regular season, it was McDavid 1, Drysdale 2, and Mark Scheifele 3. So really impressive in terms of his consistency. And Wheeler brings that later round exposure. You'd have to reach for Kyle Connor. You'd have to reach for Nikolai Ehlers and Hellebuck. But of course, like, you could get Wheeler a little later because he's older, but he's been very steady through the years. So I'd invest in a player like that as well. One other bargain center is Jonathan Toews later on, who I think boosts Dominik Kubalik's value. I think that secondary scoring in Chicago could be the thing that keeps them in contention against a team like St. Louis that has great secondary scoring. If the guys stay healthy in Chicago, that Toews-Kubalik wrinkle could really put them over the top and get them into the playoffs, maybe over a St. Louis Blues team.
And that's one of the things, especially in Chicago, I'm looking to see what happens up the middle. Like, I think it would be smart, as we've seen early on, to insulate Kirby Dach. I think it's tough to remember, but like, going into last season, there was a lot of hype about Kirby Dach. Then he gets hurt in the World Junior exhibition play, and there pretty much goes his season. So I think the plan is in Chicago to start Dach on the third line, but don't be shocked if he moves into the top six, right? Like, the kid's so talented, and what they have building in that top six, I believe right now Tyler Johnson could be centering a line or has been looked at as a center potentially. So I'm interested to see how it falls in Chicago in general, because you talk about teams, there's a lot of hype around. I think the Hawks have to be one of them right now,
especially after their offseason moves and bringing in big names and Seth Jones and Marc-Andre Fleury, who, by the way, wants desperately to win another Stanley Cup. So you know his heart and soul is going to be in trying to win every night. Now, this situation smells far too similarly to Coach Quinn with the New York Rangers, who absolutely refused to give young players prominent roles in the lineup. And I think for Jeremy Colton, he should be worried, because this team has one more kick at the can here to win a Stanley Cup championship. And Kirby Dach is the guy that could put you over the top. He's the guy that might have a bad shift in the first period and cost a goal, but he'll score two in the game. That's the type of team that this is. And I think they should play into that brand and be a little bit more of a fire wagon team. They are not a Montreal Canadiens or a New York Islanders where they can sit back defensively and protect the lead. They've got to score another goal to win that game. So I would just say, for fantasy owners that have those concerns, which are valid, Nick, I think you've got to overlook that and put your faith in the player and then he'll find his way into the lineup. If you're rolling out there with Tyler Johnson as your number one center, you're not making the playoffs.
I agree. And when push comes to shove, and you guys would probably agree, like, it's Patrick Kane's team. If Patrick Kane can have that type of year that we've seen in the past, then I think Chicago is going to be in a good position. Just look at the resume of Marc-Andre Fleury. You know, I was on with Boomer Gordon of SiriusXM NHL Network Radio last week, and he was saying how he wasn't as bullish as others on Marc-Andre Fleury. Look at the track record. Everybody underestimates the guy. All he does is make the Stanley Cup playoffs. All he does is win, won a Vezina trophy last season. I don't put as much stock into the age thing. Like, look at Mike Smith coming off the season he did. He's about to be 40. I think Marc-Andre Fleury is like a fine wine, and it seems like everywhere this guy goes, he turns into absolute gold and makes the playoffs. So don't be shocked.
I'm worried only if, like, they lose one significant player to injury, yes, Chicago's done. Like, Florida could have four or five injuries and still be one of the top teams in the league, even if you're talking about their floor. What's the floor for the Chicago Blackhawks this season?
Playoffs.
It could get ugly.
Well, and Petey, you bring up a really good point in these injury concerns, because that's so true. Like, teams like Florida don't have to worry about that. Teams like Washington, where Nicklas Backstrom is rumored to be week to week, might miss the season opener. Keep an eye on that. No problem, because you have Hendrix LaPierre, best name in hockey, by the way, first round draft pick competing for that spot. You have Connor McMichael, who lit it up in the AHL, lit it up at every single level competing for that spot. You don't have those levels of concerns, where if the Blackhawks have one injury to one of those 20 plus goal scorers, one guy on defense, they are done. And I have personal stock invested in this because Marc-Andre Fleury is my number one goalie in a fantasy league this year. So, you know, I will have close tabs on this the whole season long.
It's fascinating to me, like, again, how different this league has become, where we're actually actively talking about the Vezina Trophy winner from last season and wondering, you know, like I don't know what's going to happen, right? Like, it's pretty crazy. But again, Marc-Andre Fleury, I'm siding with this guy because every year people are against this guy, underestimate him, and he does his thing. And I can't doubt him anymore, especially what happened in Vegas.
Right. And one thing about when you have a poor defense fantasy-wise, whether it's Demko in Vancouver or Fleury in Chicago, and we've seen many examples of this in Chicago in recent years, whether it was Crawford that one year or Robin Leonard before he got traded. There have been like four or five guys that have done this. They've put up like a 915 or 920, even though it's been a non-playoff team, because they have the high save volume, and you know, it just works out that way. So if people are wondering why we have Fleury projected for, what, 25 wins? Like, of course, a good goalie in the NHL of Fleury's ilk usually has 30-plus wins. We're thinking that he's going to have some decent peripherals in the save percentage category. He'll have the 1A at the very least, maybe even be the full-time starter over Kevin Lankinen. So he'll get decent start volume, and he'll get you like 25, 26 wins, something like that, with a good save percentage, and keep the Blackhawks in contention. So anybody that thinks that win projection thing is way too low, there's some context to it, and that's what we're thinking.
So I want to throw out a few defenseman bargains before we wrap up here. Guys that I've got my eye on, Josh Morrissey is not being drafted into the last round of standard drafts on Yahoo. That's a player that could easily hold down the first power play spot occasionally throughout the season. He covers categories, so I like that pick. Thomas Chabot, 120 overall. I feel like that's too low for him. Ottawa's going to have a good power play. He's a great quarterback on that. And then one interesting one here I want to ask you guys. Brent Burns is being selected 131 overall on average. I am completely out on the San Jose Sharks, but he still has that fantasy name brand. Are you seeing any appeal in taking a Burns or Carlson around those spots and drafts?
These guys are tough, and I know you guys have these guys packaged in your rankings around each other together at that. There's been a couple years in a row where you're like, oh, here we go. And I'm, you know, last year, I think we were looking at these guys in the top 80 and it didn't come together. It ultimately comes down to somebody's got to score. I expect a couple of bounce backs, namely Logan Couture. We'll see what happens with the Evander Kane situation. You know, I think there's going to be a bit of value there, and I think that's a fine range for me to look at, like 140 to 160, because I think once you get to that point in your draft, you're pretty much taking flyers at that point anyways. And by flyers, I mean guys who could pan out. They may not pan out. Like, another guy I would bring up is Tony DeAngelo. I don't know how you guys feel about him, but there is potential there. I think oftentimes in my drafts, I'm looking at guys with potential to do something substantial, because you guys will concur, like, there comes a point in time when it comes to fantasy blue liners where you're just not getting much in terms of you know, value. And I think you're looking for value at that point in your draft. So I will say, yeah, I think I would look at a guy like Burns and reach a bit.
I'm much more interested in Burns than I am in Carlson.
Yeah.
Burns, even last year, I think that was like the basement floor, you know, type of production for him. And it was still prorated over 82 games. It was 43 points. So if he has any slight bounce back, he'll get you 50 points. And in the scope of the defenseman position, what would that make him? Top 10, top 15, something like that. So you're talking about a very high floor for Brent Burns, and he'll get you a ton of shots on goal as well. Even if things go off the rails there, you never know. They could maybe shift them to forward or something. They've done that maybe many times in the past. So you could get that extra flexibility at some point. Just pure speculation, but we've seen it before. So I would lean Burns over Carlson, who's simply not the player that he used to be. And last year was the one time that we finally saw him stay healthy and underachieve production wise. In prior seasons, right, it was always, oh, he was banged up, so that's why his production was down. But, you know, that's what we saw with Carlson last year, which was really discouraging.
And two other guys here I think we can piggyback off of. One is Tomas Hertl, who's in a contract year, Pete. That's a player who's really good for category coverage, goals, assists. He hits a little bit. He's got good shot volumes. Could easily see him kind of playing his way into a higher salary, no question. Again, I think what Nick said earlier is important. Even if they're not going to win a lot of hockey games, there's still going to be value on certain players in fantasy. And then the other guy, like Pete, is Nazem Kadri of the Colorado Avalanche. Before the show started, Nick made a good point about Kadri kind of playing his way into being a number one center, potentially on another team that's not totally strapped like the Avalanche. So those are two names that I would have no hesitation selecting to fill out my fantasy lineup late in drafts.
Right. And so much went wrong for Kadri, of course, with the suspension in the playoffs, which we had seen prior in his career a couple of times, but also, you know, that stretch in the second half of the season, him and Burakovsky were just so hot and cold. Burakovsky finished strong, I think, when Kadri was, you know, being moved around the lineup and moved to wing a little bit, but they're going to rely heavily. I mean, if Colorado is going to be this team that we're, you know, spicing them up to be, they're going to need Kadri to bounce back. They're going to need Burakovsky to be close to a point per game player. Last year, I think he had 42 and 52. So he's still no player to dismiss in your fantasy drafts. You could get Kadri a lot later, though, based on ADP than Berkey. So a really good team to go back to the well with and not think twice about in late rounds. If you're getting right a Sam Girard or a Nazem Kadri, you're in good hands this season.
And even for the defense there, Pete, it's looking like Bowen Byram. I mean, he's put some highlight reel plays together early on in the preseason here. I guess my only concern is not with the player, but just the role that he'll be given. He's probably going to be, you know, starting a little bit lower in the lineup, but clearly has all the tools that you want to succeed in fantasy, specifically points wise. And Colorado, as we've seen, they've got the injury bug the past few seasons. Them and the Pittsburgh Penguins always seem to have big guys going down periodically here and there, fantasy relevant players. You know, it's you hate to say it, but if there were an injury to one of their top two, top three defensemen, Devon Taves is already going to miss some time. Bowen Byram could keep a spot either on the first power play or at least north of 22 minutes a game.
Right. And I think it's important that Colorado kept Landeskog and they're getting Eric Johnson back. Like, those are the guys that are going to keep the locker room together. And if you can add Eric Johnson into the, you know, into the playoff mix, if he's healthy, I think it could help get that team over the top. It's been a guy that's been out of the lineup way more times than he's been in the lineup over the past two or three seasons, but a guy that was a former number one pick and I think part of the leadership group in Colorado. So the defense is still loaded, even though they don't have Graves anymore and Taves is banged up. So yeah. I think, you know, definitely in the lineup, Newhook is another one that could take on an expanded role. You could get him really later off the waiver wire. So see where he's playing, but there will be an opportunity for Newhook again in his second season with the Avalanche.
And in the same division, the Minnesota Wild are a team too, PD. I've seen some bargains on Kevin Fiala going around 135. I don't know what I'm missing there, but he seems to be one of the safer selections outside the top 100. Do you have concerns about the Wild regressing, or do you think they're going to take the next step forward like I do?
I think they might regress a tiny bit, but they're still going to be a bona fide playoff team, and they have the prospects to integrate. Marco Rossi, definitely one of the single best deep sleeper rookies in the entire landscape this year, after 2019-20 leading the entire OHL and scoring with like 120 points. And then, you know, I think the big question for me with Minnesota is, are we going to see any type of games anymore with some of these players? Like, I was really encouraged by Erickson Ek last year, but why wasn't he playing on the top line? I was really encouraged by Kaapo Kähkönen, but why was he not more of a 1B and not a clear backup banished late in the season? So for Dean Evason, Nick, I think that there are some questions about him, not in terms of the state of the team, but just the usage of some of these players, whether it's Rossi, Erickson Ek, Fiala even. Fiala is one of his guys too. They have that connection from the AHL days, and he was amazing in that shortened season 2 years ago. But I'm not concerned about Kevin Fiala because he is in tight with Evason, but I am concerned with Kähkönen and Rossi and Erickson Ek because for whatever reason, we haven't seen them as staples on top lines yet.
Yeah, I'm fascinated with Minnesota in general because I think it's one thing to be the surprise team. It's another thing to sort of hold that position as like a tough team to play against. And, you know, I always wonder about guys in second years and Kirill Kaprizov, how he'll handle the pressure, especially if a big time contract now. So I wonder if maybe there's a bit of a dip initially, although I have him in my top 40. Fiala's had two strong, consistent seasons in a row, but I think you're right. And, you know, that was the big mystifying thing for me, not to discredit what Seattle did, but Kaapo Kähkönen, you know, I think is a stud to be in this league. But apparently I found out last year, the analytics community does not like Kaapo Kähkönen, and that's what led Seattle not to select Kaapo Kähkönen, because I just thought it was a shoe, and clearly it didn't end up being that way. But I think he's a guy, when you talk about goalie specifically, I think he's going to push Cam Talbot this year. I think Cam Talbot at this point in his career, we know what he is. I think he's a really, really good goalie. I just don't know if he can be a perennial number one in this league. And I think anyways, like, it's a tandem heavy league regardless of that fact. And I think they're going to weigh on Kähkönen a lot more than we expect going into this season. So I think at the very least, Minnesota is going to be a tough team to play against. I just don't know what kind of damage they'll do this time around, but there's some guys I would look at for sure.
Final thought from me here is I do think Kaprizov, regardless of signing the big deal or not, is a top 20 player in the NHL and fantasy. The reason I'm saying that is nothing to do with the analytics crowd, although they do love him. Yeah. It's more so just that he's one of the players you watch, and every single night he does something to absolutely floor you. It's almost incomprehensible sometimes the type of plays that that player makes. And those are the guys, Nick and Pete, that, you know, yes, he played almost at a point per game already in his first season. Those are the guys that really don't have a ceiling. Like, they could absolutely blow it out of the water, score 100 plus points, and no one would be shocked by it here on the panel. So I think when you have that kind of potential, even with the big contract maybe looming over you, fresh ink on the paper, barely even dry, I think you still have to go out and reach for that player, whether you're fully comfortable doing it with Minnesota's concerns or not.
I would just to wrap on that convo, like, I understand what you're saying. I get flashbacks, like PTSD, to Svechnikov and Elias Patterson, right? Like, these are guys that we've touted the last couple of years. It's tough to live up to expectation. That's all I'll say. I hope Kaprizov has an unbelievable season. I think he's a fantastic player, but it's a grueling league. Like, that's the amazing thing about sports, guys, and in general in the NHL, is like how difficult it is year to year. And that's why the last little while I've been listening to a lot of interviews with players as they go into this season, and they just talk about the constant grind, what the last couple of years have been like. And it's going to be a much different league, travel included, games played included for Kirill Kaprizov, that I'm expecting maybe a bit of a blip, or, you know, a downturn in production, if you want to call it that. I still think he's a perennial fantasy stud for years to come. I'm just trying my best to temper expectation. That's all I'm saying.
Right. He might need a stable centerman to, exactly, you know, to not only replicate, but also build on, because, yeah, definitely Minnesota for a lot of last year, their PDO was really high. And they we saw it regular season and playoffs. They took those two teams, Colorado and Vegas, you know, to the brink. They took Vegas to game seven. They played really tough against both of those teams. I think they either tied or won the season series with both of those teams last year. So they have a great blueprint. And I do think with guys like Rossi and Boldy coming up, we still haven't even seen the best out of them. And even with them, they lost Suter, but they added Goligoski. So like the defense is really just as sound as it was last year, really. And you're going to see a lot of production from Spurgeon if he's on power play one, or Dumba. So a lot of fantasy assets on the Minnesota Wild for sure.
And then one last team here, Nick, as we wrap up, the Dallas Stars. I know you mentioned them a little bit pre-show. Miro Heiskanen's the guy that's obviously attractive, but John Klingberg, who has been the top dog there on defense, is in a contract year. Maybe give me a quick little hit on why you like him this season.
I just like him because of my last name and my fantasy names, you know, speaks for it's John Klingberg. Like, it's perfect. Now, I think Klingberg's a really, like, and I've been on this guy's tail since he was randomly called up to the NHL and started producing at a point per game clip a couple of years back with Dallas, especially on the power play. It's a two-headed monster on the back end. Then you add in Suter as well. Like, I think Dallas is going to be a team that I'm giving the benefit of the doubt to because of what happened last year and everything involved, that I think they have a good bounce back. Tyler Seguin's back in the mix. But when you look at Klingberg specifically, that's one of the storylines I'm watching with Dallas this season, is like the power plays and how they're ran. Like, I think obviously there's way more value in playing on the PP1 than PP2. And I'm curious to see what happens. You know, I would think that Heiskanen, because he's a younger player, I think they want to be careful with this progression. Granted, they're paying him a lot of money, that say, hey, maybe focus a bit more on the defensive game and we'll have Klingberg on PP1. But I could be wrong, because Heiskanen's a perfect example, offensively speaking, who could have a bounce back season. I think in general, the fascination for me with Dallas is, like, you look at that roster, sometimes they struggle to provide offense, which is crazy, right? So you put all these guys in place now, Roope Hintz, Gurianov, and then you add Seguin back into the mix. I think people are going to sleep on Dallas, and I wouldn't. And don't forget the name Jake Oettinger either, right? They have 17 goalies on their roster, but don't forget that name.
Right. I think we all like Oettinger the most out of that four-headed monster. And I mean, really, it's not even four-headed, because Bishop, we don't know if he's fully healthy and ready to play. I would expect Dallas, whenever a major goalie goes down, they'll be sitting there ready to trade Khudobin or trade Holtby, or depending on how things go in the first month or two of the season. Maybe that's how they're going to attack this season, because you can't carry four goalies. You just can't. So anyway, for Dallas, the other thing with them is, like, Radulov, now that he's back, I saw he was playing in the preseason the other day and scored. So the thing about Dallas, though, they're so deep in the top six, top nine. You're going to see either Gurianov or Radulov probably playing on the third line. You know, it's just there's not enough room for those guys. Pinched. So, someone's going to get either off power play one or out of the top six. So that's just one thing. Don't load up on Dallas Stars forwards just because you don't really know exactly what you get. And of course, Jamie Benn is, you know, has been on a steady decline, still brings it in some games, but I just don't think he has the same impact on a night to night basis to take in any of the first, you know, 12 rounds of your draft. If he falls really far, you can get some decent category coverage from him, but gone are the days that Jamie Benn is a fantasy powerhouse, you know?
So what are we, 8 days away from the start of this regular season? It's almost here, eh?
Yeah, we're excited here.
You've got your rankings coming out on sportsnet.ca. Is that right, Nick?
Correct. Throughout this week, I'll be releasing, you know, bits of information, including my top 250, five players to avoid, top 10 sleepers, a rookie watch. So it's all coming your way on sportsnet.ca this week.
Very good. Glad to hear it. And looking forward to comparing our rankings when they come out. And definitely everybody should go to Yahoo Fantasy to sign up for season-long fantasy for top-shelf fantasy hockey action this season. Play Yahoo Fantasy Hockey. Yahoo Fantasy Hockey makes it easy to play, draft, and manage your league. Now you can up the draft day intensity with the new Draft Together feature. So choose the best way to play fantasy hockey. Play Yahoo Fantasy Hockey, an official season-long fantasy partner of the NHL. So again, for Nick Alberga at the Golden Muzzy, thanks so much for joining us. Bob Bender, Rob Reese, this is Pete Jensen. We'll be back with you later this week. We're starting the 2 episodes per week, baby. So let's go. We're going to have one of the guys from the Action Network on for sure to preview the gambling and betting landscape, futures, bold predictions for fantasy, that sort of thing. Really looking forward to it. Thanks for listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice. Leave us a 5-star review if you love this content, and we'll talk to you next time.